So on this past Saturday, both AEW All Out and WWE Wrestlepalooza both delivered in their own way. On one end, you had about a five-hour show that had a lot of action and a lot of crazy events that went down. On the other hand, you had five matches on a show, and they all delivered in their own way. But who won the weekend? What show is better? Was it AEW's All Out or WWE Wrestlepalooza? Find out my thoughts right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wrestling DeLorean Podcast. Here is your host, Mike DeNiro.
Are you ready?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wrestling DeLorean Podcast, where we don't just go back in time and talk about the glory days of pro wrestling. We also talk about the news and notes around the wrestling world. I'm your host, Mike DeNiro, and today we have a super stacked show because not only are we talking all about AEW All Out, but we're also talking about WWE Wrestlepalooza, the very first WWE PLE in the ESPN era. Both shows delivered, both shows had a lot of newsworthy things that happened, but I think it is quite clear that one show was better than the other. I'm going to talk about both shows and tell you who I thought won the wrestling war this past Saturday. Let's start the show right now, y'all. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me on this beautiful Monday, like you do every Monday and Friday here on the Wrestling DeLorean Podcast. Without you, there is no me. So before we get into the show, hit that subscribe button, hit that download button, and if you feel compelled to, then leave us a five-star review. It is also appreciated. Follow us on Instagram at Wrestling DeLorean Pod and follow us on TikTok at Wrestling DeLorean Pod. Thank you to all my Wrestling DeLorean passengers from all over the world. I love you all. Let's talk some pro wrestling, shall we? This past Saturday was super stacked. There was a lot that went down. I believe a total of 18 to 20 matches. Like, I should probably have a better count of them. But about 20 matches, roughly, took place on Saturday with the five-hour-plus AEW All Out event from Toronto and with the 2.5-hour events for the WWE live in Indiana and for their first PLE on ESPN. I think that, I don't know, I personally wasn't fatigued by the end of the night. I know a lot of people were. There was a lot of chatter online that was a little too much wrestling if you decided to watch both on the same night, especially if you had to sit down from the 2 o'clock pre-show from AEW, which had matches on TBS for the tailgate brawl or whatever they called it. If you sat down from the 2 o'clock mark all the way down to the 10:30 mark, it's a lot of wrestling. I don't care if it's split up between two different companies. It wasn't like you had any buffer in between. AEW's show, the official show, went from 3 o'clock Eastern to about 7:50-something. It was like 7:55. And then on WWE's side, the show started at 7. So if you finished AEW all the way through, you're already an hour out from the WWE show, so you had to go back and start that. So if you watched them consecutively, one after another, like they were designed to be, you watched a whole lot of wrestling on Saturday. But nonetheless, I was a trooper. I sat through it all, and I enjoyed myself. I mean, it is my pride and passion to watch wrestling and explain why I feel the way I feel and review it for my beautiful Wrestling DeLorean passengers. So I will never complain to watch wrestling and get on the podcast and talk about what I saw. Starting out with AEW, though, AEW All Out was a long show, but it was definitely a show that delivered. AEW this year has had an amazing, amazing track record when it came to pay-per-views, and this show was no different. You had an amazing card, a stack card, a card that was filled with legends, a card that was filled with some of the best wrestlers today, and also a card that was filled with surprises. And surprises is a key word because WWE promised surprises. And if what we got was a surprise, then I wouldn't really consider it a surprise. On AEW's end, we got returns. We got debuts. We got batshit crazy action. We had somebody setting someone on fire, which was obviously controlled and done safely, but still absolutely insane. Crazy for Jon Moxley to even agree to doing a spot like that. And on the WWE side, we had Undertaker come out and announce that Stephanie McMahon is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Now, it's no disrespect to Stephanie. I think Stephanie definitely deserves to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And this was a beautiful moment. I actually really liked the moment. I thought it was really cool how they set it up, and Undertaker came out and broke the news to her that she's being inducted to the Hall of Fame, and Stephanie was completely blindsided, which is always awesome when you catch them like by surprise like that. But if that's the only surprise that took place on the WWE show, then that leaves a lot to be desired when you promise surprises and promise going all out, no pun intended, for your first show on ESPN. There's a lot of chit-chat and chatter that WWE underdelivered. Now, I don't think they underdelivered. I just don't think that they overdelivered like people expected, especially with this being the first time that the ESPN audience gets to witness the WWE. There must have been people who tuned in for the first time. Just like during the Netflix debut, there was a lot of people who tuned in for the first time. And yes, there was a lot of pop and circumstance, and there was a lot of, you know, good wrestling. There was, and we'll talk about all the matches too. There was a lot of good wrestling, but I mean, I just don't think that it was anything out of the ordinary. It kind of felt like a WWE Saturday Night's main event. It felt like we just rushed a bunch of names and stars on a show to counteract AEW, which should never be the way, you know? I definitely don't mind the competition in wrestling. I just don't think that going out of your way to maliciously take down AEW is the way to go. I don't know. I love both companies. Everyone knows I love both companies. But if I am being honest, why are we, you know, putting a show the same day as AEW's pay-per-view and giving a subpar performance? I don't know. I really can't answer that question. But regardless, what we saw in the ring was really good. What we saw in the ring for both shows were really good. And I am going to break down all the matches. Starting out, I thought that it was interesting for AEW when they had their tailgate brawl live on TBS. It was basically a one-hour collision to lead you into the pay-per-view. Basically, think of Sunday Night Heat before a pay-per-view back in the day for the WWE. That's what AEW did. But if you were tuning in on HBO Max, if you were tuning in on YouTube, you were getting a completely different pre-show. So you had to make the decision what pre-show you want to watch. Did you want to watch a pre-show where they were breaking down all the matches last minute, or did you want to watch a pre-show where there were actual matches? Now, I watched the pre-show with the actual matches, the TBS pre-show, the tailgate brawl, but maybe that was not the best idea, because adding an extra hour of wrestling to a day that's filled with wrestling maybe have not been the best idea, when I could have just started the main show at 3 o'clock. But I'm probably one of those sickos that Tony Khan talks about making TV for. So with that being said, the tailgate brawl was good. Danny Garcia versus Shibata was fun. I really liked the Work Horseman versus Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs. All the women showed out. The women are always showing out on AEW. And I really like that the women got multiple matches here. We had 3 women's matches on this long 5-hour show. And I know that's always a complaint, that people want more women's action for AEW. You have all this women talent that is super talented, and they only give the women 1 or 2 matches. So it was really cool to see AEW give another slot for the women here. But yeah, nothing out of the ordinary really stands out for the tailgate brawl. Just the fact that it was more wrestling. And I don't think that AEW necessarily needs to put on 3 to 4 matches on top of a 10-match card for a pre-show, but to whose its own. That's what they do. Their style is different from the WWE. They believe in, you know, giving you every penny worth of your money by giving you the most action they could give you in a 4 to 5 hour time slot. When we come back from this commercial break, we're going to be talking about the main card, all the surprises that went down for AEW, all the title changes, because there were title changes, and everything in between for AEW All Out.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get into the main card for AEW All Out. The card started out really hot. By the way, this was a special night. I forgot to mention that this was a special night because this was the very first AEW pay-per-view live on HBO Max. Just like WWE was debuting live on ESPN, AEW had their own debut of their own. Really, really cool to see HBO Max holding AEW pay-per-view. Really, really fun way to open the show. We had the tag team dream match between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage versus FTR. And this match definitely delivered, especially in front of that home crowd for both Christian and Edge or Adam Copeland, whatever you want to call him. They had the crowd 1,000% behind them. The really cool moment that took place during the matchup was we had Stokely Hathaway get involved, which led to the AEW debut of Beth Copeland, the former Beth Phoenix debuts for AEW. And this was alluded to this past week on AEW Dynamite with Copeland talking about how his wife could knock out or whatever he said for against Stokely Hathaway. But really cool to see Beth as a part of AEW by her husband's side, because when Edge was in the WWE, we saw a lot of Edge and Beth Phoenix working together. So I was really happy to see them work together here in AEW. It's just, it didn't necessarily go their way. You know, we had Edge and Christian win the matchup, and then afterwards, we had the, I don't even know if you even call them the patriarchy anymore, but you had Mother Wayne, Nick Wayne, and Kip Sabian attack Copeland and Christian. Christian Cage is knocked out. Copeland is handcuffed to the ring rope. And then all of a sudden, FTR hits a spike pile driver on Beth. What a way to debut. You help your husband win the matchup, and then you get a spike pile driver. And this was all right in front of Adam Copeland. So you know, we're about to get an absolute blood feud between FTR, Christian, and Copeland, because now it is 100% personal. You put the hands on your man's wife, and now you're going to feel the wrath of Copeland. I would not be surprised if we get a darker Copeland and Cage here, possibly a brood Copeland and Cage. But that's how the show started. It started out hot. Next up, we had Big Bill versus Eddie Kingston, which was a pretty lackluster matchup, if I'm being honest. But it was really cool to see Eddie Kingston back. Eddie Kingston, who looks like he's in great shape. He lost a lot of weight. He had a good performance here against Big Bill. And I'm happy to see him back, and I hope he stays around for quite a while, because this show definitely missed someone like Eddie Kingston. After the matchup, we had Brian Keith attack Eddie Kingston, and there was a 2-on-1 beatdown between Brian Keith and Big Bill against Eddie Kingston until we got the vigilante of AEW, Hook, came out and helped Eddie Kingston fight off Big Bill and fight off Brian Keith. We now see Hook and Eddie Kingston embrace, and it looks like Hook and Eddie Kingston are going to be somewhat of a tag team, which I like. I really do like that. I really like where they're going with Hook, breaking off of the ops, going with Eddie Kingston. Imagine a Powerhouse Hobbs and Samoa Joe match versus Hook and Eddie Kingston. Or even if you want to go Samoa Joe and Shibata versus Hook and Kingston. That shit has me salivating. That sounds like an amazing tag match. But anyway, Next up on the show, we had the Hurt Syndicate, all three members, MVP, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin against the Gates of Agony and Ricochet, who are now calling themselves The Demand, which is a pretty cool name. I like it. And surprisingly, The Demand picked up the victory. Now, I was here on Friday, and I said it was important, very important, to have the team of Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and MVP win this matchup. I did not think that The Demand needed to win the matchup, but they obviously went that way for a reason. It looks like they're going to be getting a push. I was more in favor of Bobby Lashley winning this matchup, moving on to bigger and better things, possibly a world title hunt. I really want Bobby Lashley in that world title picture. Imagine Lashley versus Hangman Page, Lashley versus guys like MJF, guys like Swerve, guys like Kenny Omega. That would be awesome. And that's where Bobby Lashley deserves to be. Like I said on Friday, the man has been a world champion everywhere he's been. And now the Hurt Syndicate lost to Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, which I'm not mad at, but I'm confused. What's next for the Hurt Syndicate? Because this is the second pay-per-view in a row where the Hurt Syndicate has lost a matchup after looking so dominant for the ending of 2024 and all of 2025. Now you're starting to see them take some jobs. We had in the table and thumbtack match, it was MJF versus Mark Briscoe, which was a very brutal matchup. Mark Briscoe is a crazy, crazy guy, man. He started the matchup by pouring buckets after buckets after buckets of thumbtacks all over that ring, where no matter where you stood, no matter where you landed, you were probably getting punctured. There was a whole lot of thumbtacks. And I was surprised at the levels of violence that this match took it to. There was a lot of crazy, crazy spots that both MJF and Mark Briscoe did. And I got to say, kudos to those guys. I would never do this. But in the end, there was yet again another shocking outcome because just like I said about Bobby Lashley, I said about MJF needing to win this matchup. And that is not the case. Mark Briscoe won the matchup. And kudos to Mark Briscoe finally getting his ultimate revenge on MJF. And I love the Briscoes. I always did. I'm a huge Mark Briscoe fan. I just question if Mark Briscoe is now going to get a push or is it going to be back to business as usual and MJF is going to remain stuck in this position that he's in right now. Because this upcoming week on Dynamite, Mark Briscoe is in a random tag or a six-man tag match against the Don Callis family, and MJF is not even booked at the moment. If Mark Briscoe won the matchup, I think Mark Briscoe should probably be getting a world title shot soon. I mean, Mark Briscoe is somebody who just defeated MJF, who was the number one contender for the world champion last month. Mark Briscoe defeats him. What's next? I do think that we should be probably getting Mark Briscoe versus Hangman Page for the world title. It only makes sense. He just beat the former number one contender. Shouldn't he be a number one contender himself? But that's the part of AEW booking that I find confusing sometimes is you have these wrestlers win big matches and it's supposed to put them on the map. Even though I'm not saying Mark Briscoe was put on the map, Mark Briscoe been on the map for a long time, but it's supposed to elevate them and elevate their position in the company and it doesn't. But nonetheless, Mark Briscoe wins the matchup. We have for the AEW TBS Championship, Rio versus Mercedes Moné. A fun matchup. Two women who are pretty evenly sized, pretty evenly built. I know that it's not often that Rio gets to go against people that are around her size, so that's really cool to see Rio, you know, have someone in there that she could tangle it up with. And these two women had a really good matchup. Rio was putting Mercedes in some crazy submissions where she had the torque on her leg all the way back to the head. It was nasty. But in the end, Mercedes Moné is still your AEW TBS champion. Who is going to take that title from Mercedes? I am not mad that Mercedes is still champion. I don't want her to lose the title anytime soon. I mean, I just wonder who is being built up to take that title. She went against a who's who. She's beat them all. Besides Toni Storm, who may be looking for gold after tonight, but we're going to talk about that. Anyway, Next up, we had the very violence, the very deranged matchup of Darby Allin versus Jon Moxley in a coffin match. And yeah, this was everything you thought it'd be. These two guys were stabbing each other with forks and just being extremely gruesome to each other. Yeah, to be honest, this is like the fifth month in a row that Jon Moxley has these ultra-violent matches, and I don't know. I wonder what's next. Darby Allin loses this matchup after the return of Pac. Pac is now once again with the Death Riders, and the Death Riders basically take out Darby Allin. No one helps Darby Allin. He told Bryan Danielson to stand down and not to get involved. No one helped Darby Allin. All Bryan Danielson did was hand him a weapon, but no one helps Darby. Darby loses the matchup after some sick bumps, taking a power bomb to the outside on top of a coffin. Nasty bump. No one helps Darby, and Darby loses the matchup. But it's not the end of the story, because after we see Darby Allin and Jon Moxley mix it up in the back, and we get more craziness, but we'll get there when we get there. Jon Moxley wins the matchup. What's next for Jon Moxley? Is Jon Moxley going to go after Hangman Page again? Is Jon Moxley going to continue this feud with Darby Allin? And it looks like that's the direction they're going. But Jon Moxley was built up for many months as this underboss, or this final boss, I should say, of AEW that no one could defeat. Because not only do you have to fight Jon Moxley, but you have to fight the entire Hurt Syndicate. No one could defeat him. And if you continue to have him undefeated, then eventually he's going to want to get a rematch for his title, you would think. So I wonder what's next for Moxley. Next up on the show, we had a very, very good women's four-way matchup for the AEW Women's World Champion. It was the matchup contested between Toni Storm, Thekla, Jamie Hayter, and Chris Statlander. These four women put on an absolute clinic. This was a great, great matchup. And I got to say, kudos to all four women. They were doing their thing. They had a great match. Thekla looked awesome in the ring, doing her, you know, crazy toxic spider gimmick, doing those suplexes from the top as she was tied up in the ropes. Everybody delivered. But I thought, and I mentioned this on Friday, I said that I thought that they were going to just feed these four women or three women to Toni Storm, and they were going to continue the Toni Storm world title reign. And I was extremely wrong, because Toni Storm loses this matchup to Chris Statlander, who won the title for the very first time. Statlander is a former TBS champion, but this is the first time Statlander gets to hold the AEW Women's World Champion. And it was a shocking, shocking moment. I was definitely surprised. I did not think that they were going to take the title off of Toni Storm, especially in a what many consider a random four-way matchup. Toni Storm being one of their most over talents, I was shocked. And so was she. I love the way that they had her walking up the ramp all slowly, looking back, confused, as you had Chris Statlander holding up the title and celebrating with Harley Cameron. But I was shocked, and it was a very, very, very cool outcome. Shout out to Chris Statlander, who 100% deserves that title. She has been there since day one, and she has been an amazing, amazing asset to AEW's women's division. Last year, she was having banger after banger after banger against Mercedes Moné, against Willow Nightingale. I'm so glad that she finally got the reward that she deserves. We then had the four-way tag match, the ladder match for the AEW tag team titles. It was the team of Brodito putting their titles on the line against the Young Bucks, the Don Callis family, and Jet Flight, or Jet Speed, whatever they call themselves. Jet Speed. Really crazy matchup. Too many crazy, crazy, crazy bumps. Insane action. A lot of people got hurt. Table bumps. Ladder bumps, insane pile drivers, power bombs to the outside, insane amount of action. This was very reminiscent of the first All Out, where the Young Bucks faced the Lucha Bros in a ladder match. I believe they called it Escalera de la Muerte. But it was a very crazy matchup. The real story being what happened after the matchup. After Brodito retains their title, The Young Bucks are in the ring, and then out comes Jack Perry. We haven't seen Jack Perry for many months here on AEW. The former scapegoat, and I say former because Jack Perry attacks the Young Bucks, and the Young Bucks get the upper hand on him. The numbers game was on the Young Bucks' advantage. They were attacking Jack Perry, and then all of a sudden the lights go out. We see a video package, and we get the return, not of Killswitch, but the return of Luchasaurus, who takes out both Young Bucks, hits huge huge choke slams on Nick and Matt. And then we see not the scapegoat and Killswitch, but Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Luchasaurus celebrate as in the arena they play out Tarzan Boy. This was an awesome moment. I'm very happy to have Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus back. The Jurassic Express. They're going to be a really cool addition to the tag team division. And also, I made it very known all through 2024. I was not feeling the whole scapegoat gimmick for Jack Perry. So I'm very glad that he's back to being Jungle Boy. And I wasn't feeling Killswitch, the wannabe Kane. So I'm very glad that he's back to Luchasaurus. Really cool to see Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus back together again. That's another surprise that they delivered. And in the main event, we had a 40-plus minute matchup between Hangman Page and Kyle Fletcher. Now, I wonder if AEW went uncontested this night and WWE did not put on their show this night. I wonder if AEW would have had the matchup go 40-plus minutes because the WWE show started at 7 o'clock Eastern. This matchup went on about 6:55 and lasted for most of that first hour of the WWE show. I wonder if that was by design. It probably was. But nonetheless, I said it here on Friday. Kyle Fletcher needs to show that he could hang in the main event. And boy, did Kyle Fletcher showed that he could hang in the main event. This was a phenomenal matchup between Fletcher and Hangman. And I gotta say, Kyle Fletcher's a bona fide main eventer. At the ripe age of 23 years old, this man is going to be a big, big deal in pro wrestling. I am so excited. Even though Kyle Fletcher won the matchup, I'm so excited to see what's next for Kyle Fletcher. But Hangman Page is still your AEW World Heavyweight Champion. And that's how AEW went off the air. Was it a phenomenal show? I definitely think it was great. It was a really good show that delivered on many aspects. It had the violence. It had the surprises. It had the debuts. It had the title changes. It had the shocks. I definitely think AEW delivered. I am going to give it a strong 4 out of 5 stars. I think the only thing that made it drop down one star was probably the length of the show. It did feel pretty long. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back from this commercial break, we're talking all about WWE Wrestlepalooza, the very first show for WWE on ESPN. Did it deliver? We'll give our thoughts when we come back from this commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Wrestlepalooza, the very first WWE event on ESPN. This was a big, big show. This was slated as a show that WWE wanted to put on par with WrestleMania. It was rumored that WWE wants to make Wrestlepalooza one of the big pay-per-view events of the year. Or PLE events, sorry, of the year. It starts out with an awesome video package explaining that ESPN and the WWE, they both had their growth parallel to each other. And now sports is officially sports entertainment. And the WWE is here on ESPN. This was a very fun way to open. And then we instantly get into the return of Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee was there for a few matches. He wasn't there for every match, but he was there to call a few matches. Really cool. We haven't seen Pat in a while. This is his hometown of Indiana. So really cool to see Pat there. And we start out with the Beast Brock Lesnar against John Cena. This matchup was a mirror matchup to their SummerSlam 2015 matchup. Brock Lesnar dominated John Cena. Brock Lesnar hit suplex after suplex after suplex. Brock Lesnar hit F5 after F5 after F5. John Cena got a couple moves in. John Cena hit, I think, 3 attitude adjustments, and that's really it. Brock Lesnar dominated this matchup, and he won. Just like I mentioned on Friday, Brock Lesnar and John Cena's feud probably and most likely will continue. And I now think it is a shoo-in that John Cena's last ever opponent is going to be Brock Lesnar at Saturday night's main events in December. Did this have to happen? No. I did not care for this. I thought that John Cena winning would have been best for business. And John Cena's last opponent was somebody that he could put over as the future of the WWE. Someone that could go on and say that he was the guy who faced John Cena in his last match. We don't need to give another accolade to Brock Lesnar. But it is what it is. Next up, we got the Usos, Jimmy and Jay, who are in their very first official tag team matchup together since 2023. Jimmy and Jay go 2-on-2 against Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. And this was a pretty cool matchup. LA Knight was the special guest referee. There was a weird spot at the end where Jey Uso hits Bron Breakker with the chair shot. And I think he accidentally hit himself with the chair because he hits Bron with the chair and all of a sudden he's bleeding like buckets. He's like spilling blood all over the ring. And it was like, how did he bleed? He hit Bron with the chair? Nonetheless, the story of the matchup was LA Knight was showing clear favoritism towards the Usos and was basically trying to not help Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. But in the end, Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed win the matchup nonetheless. For the WWE Women's World Championship, we had Io Sky going 1-on-1 against Stephanie Vaquer. This was a very, very fun matchup. To be honest, all things considered, this might have been the best match of the night. It didn't have all the spectacle as the next matchup, but this was a very well-wrestled matchup. Both women put it all on the line and pulled out all the stops and had a great, great showing. The chemistry between Stephanie and Io Sky was really, really well. And we got the big finish at the end with Stephanie winning the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. For the first time, she did it in front of her father who was in attendance, got the big crowd pop, and we made a new star out of Stephanie. Even though she has been on the rise, we made a new star out of Stephanie, and I'm very happy with that. You know, I really like Io Sky, but I don't think that Io Sky necessarily needed another world title right now. I think that it was time to build the star power of Stephanie back here, and I am very excited to see what's next for Stephanie. You know, I'm excited for feuds for Stephanie like her versus Rhea Ripley or Stephanie versus Liv Morgan when she comes back. Stephanie versus Bianca Belair. There's so many fresh matches that you could do with Stephanie back here. She is going to run with this title for a long time, I have no doubt. This is going to be a really cool title reign. I'm very happy that they went with Stephanie back here as your new WWE Women's World Champion. In the co-main event, a matchup that I thought very well could have been the main event. Now looking back on it, it probably should have been the main event, but could have been the main event. It is the mixed tag match between Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch versus AJ Lee and CM Punk. First and foremost, the entrances were awesome. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch coming descending from the top of the arena, both dressed alike in their, I don't even know what you'd call it, their jackets that look very inspired by Eurovision. Very weird, but that's the style that they both have. And then you had the entrances of CM Punk and AJ Lee, and you could just tell that CM Punk was so excited to team up with AJ Lee. He was wearing a jacket that said AJ's husband, which was cool. Really cool to see AJ Lee be back in her old WWE attire, coming out, skipping around, and she looks like she hasn't missed a beat. This matchup was a lot of stalling to get to AJ Lee, which I knew that's what WWE does, right? So we waited 10 years, but that wasn't enough. We had to have CM Punk in this matchup for the majority of the matchup. But when AJ Lee eventually did get that tag in, that crowd popped super loud. And yeah, you know, it's been 10 years. There was a little ring rust, but can we stop judging her for not being up to par. Like, she wrestled amazingly for someone who was coming back after 10 years. I'm seeing comments online of people saying, like, oh, that was boring. I expected so much more from AJ Lee's return. What more did you expect? She hit all the greatest hits. She was pulling off the Black Widow. She was doing moves from the top rope. She dove to the outside. She got thrown onto a announce table. What did you expect? And she signed full time. She's going to be here week in and week out. She's going to be getting back into the groove of things and getting better as she wrestles more. I mean, shit, when CM Punk returned to wrestling, when he came back to wrestling, when he joined AEW, the first matchup with CM Punk and Darby Allin, people were like, oh gosh, he doesn't have it anymore. He's slow in there. It's like, dude, it's been 10 years. Give the guy some, you know, time to adjust. You can work out all you want. You can take bumps in the ring all you want until you're in there in front of people and wrestling a actual real-time matchup. You're not going to be able to prepare for that until you do it. So cut her some slack. I thought the matchup was very fun. That was a spectacle. I thought that it was everything it needed to be. And in the end, CM Punk and AJ Lee win when AJ Lee makes Becky Lynch tap out with the Black Widow, which, like I predicted on Friday, will probably lead to AJ Lee and Becky Lynch feuding for the WWE Intercontinental Champion and CM Punk feuding with Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. This matchup was everything it needed to be. If you're complaining about it, then you're just complaining just for the sake of complaining. This matchup was a good matchup. I don't know why people expected a 5-star classic in the Tokyo Dome for this matchup. But regardless, I enjoyed it. And whether you did not enjoy it or not, this is not your podcast. This is my podcast. I enjoyed it. Something I did not enjoy was the main event. The main event was Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre. And yes, they built this up with Cody Rhodes getting Claymore the night after SummerSlam 5 weeks ago through the announce table. And Cody Rhodes was off and not there for a while. And then he comes back and he has this matchup with Drew. But for everything that the last match was, this match was not. This match did not have the excitement as the last matchup with CM Punk, AJ Lee, Seth Rollins, and Becky Lynch. These two guys delivered. They had a solid matchup. But we were promised surprises. We were promised big matches. We were promised, you know, a huge show for WWE's very first ESPN showing. And the main event seemed like it could have been on Saturday night's main event. The main event could have been on SmackDown. There was nothing special or spectacular. Cody Rhodes won a clean matchup against Drew McIntyre, which is cool. Where do you go from here? Where does Drew go from here? Where does Cody go from here? This doesn't lead up to a rematch. Even though it probably will be a rematch, I don't see why there will be a rematch. Cody beat him clean. Who's the next challenger? There was nothing at the end of the show that made me scream, wow, as a first-time viewer on ESPN. If I am viewing for the first time, I got to check this out again. Which is a shame because in-ring, everything was a good show. If it wasn't for the WWE marketing this as, we're going to go all out on ESPN and there's going to be surprises on ESPN. The surprise was Stephanie's being inducted to the Hall of Fame. Congratulations, she deserves it. Undertaker came out. That's nice. I don't think it was a, oh my God, surprise. Oh my God, what is this? Oh my God, I gotta watch the next show. It wasn't that. It was just cool. All right, Undertaker came down. He announces that Stephanie's gonna be inducted. Like I said, congratulations. But I would hardly call this a surprise. Maybe a surprise for Stephanie because she was caught off guard. She was surprised. Stephanie was the only one who was surprised. But the WWE Universe after the show was not surprised by anything. And I gotta say, if it wasn't marketed as, you got to watch the very first showing of WWE on ESPN. And it was just marketed as, hey, here's our PLE. This is going to be us on ESPN now. You would have expected a show like this, but you expected more when you have reports saying things like WWE on ESPN, WrestlePalooza is going to be one of their next big shows like WrestleMania and SummerSlam is. And it did not live up to that hype. Nonetheless, I really did enjoy the show. It was a lot of wrestling on Saturday, a lot. So maybe I'm being a little cranky. If I watched WrestlePalooza maybe on Sunday as a standalone show and not after 5 hours of AEW, maybe I would have had a different opinion. But by the end of WrestlePalooza, I was tapping out and ready to fall asleep. So maybe that played a factor in it. But nonetheless, it was a good show. I would give it a 3 out of 5. You know, the matches that were supposed to hit, hit. The matches that I did not expect to hit, didn't hit. I did not expect John Cena and Brock Lesnar to put on a classic. I did not expect Cody and Drew McIntyre with very little fanfare to put on a classic. So this was a little bit of a middle-of-the-road show for WWE. But nonetheless, we'll see how they follow up tonight on Monday Night Raw. We'll see how they follow up on Friday Night SmackDown. And I'll be here on Friday with a new episode of the Wrestling DeLorean Podcast. So make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit that download button. Follow us on Instagram at Wrestling DeLorean Pod. Follow us on TikTok at Wrestling DeLorean Pod. And I will catch you here on Friday for a new episode of the Wrestling DeLorean Podcast. One love. Peace out, y'all.